And now, you're tuned in to RBLR, the home of Tampa Bay's Reveler Sports.
This is the RBLR Rays Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Dobb, along with my co-host, Pat Davenport. Pat, do you know who the third-ranked hitter in WRC Plus in MLB is as we sit here this very moment?
Great question, Zach. Absolutely great question. I'm going to hazard a guess here, and is it Johnny Aranda?
Wow, man. Truly an expert here.
Paul Miller.
Absolutely it is. And I just wanted to start off the show that way because I just felt like it, because I feel like there's so many times we talk about the team like they're the scrappy Rays, and they're just putting it together with bubblegum and toothpicks. No, we have a top five hitter right now in baseball in this lineup. And spoiler alert, he's not even the bat of the week this week. And if you want to find out who the bat of the week this week is, you got to stick around until the end of the show. And we hope that you do. We hope that you guys are having a great week. It's been a great week of Rays baseball. So if you're just a Rays fan, it's pretty good week for you. We're going to have a jam-packed show for you guys breaking down those series. We've got some additions to talk about. It's going to be a really fun show, and we hope you enjoy. And if you do, do us a massive favor and drop us a like or a follow. Really helps us out. But right now, we're going to kind of get right into it. What a week of Rays baseball, Pat.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I want to first of all throw out an apology because we flippantly and irresponsibly said at the end of last week's show that we were going to come and return talking to you while in the midst of a W5. We dropped a game on Tuesday to the D-backs 5-1. So we are only coming to you today in the midst of a W4, not a W5. Yeah. And for that, everyone in the RBLR family would like to apologize to the viewers that we're talking to today. We shouldn't have made such flippant remarks, and we should take more responsibility for our words. Only a W4, Zach. Only, I mean,
yes.
If only the Rays could rally in the late like they have every other game this week.
Yeah. If only they could. If only they would. They might. And get on a W5 before the end of the day today. Not a completely unlikely scenario. You got a right-handed pitcher that the Padres are throwing out there today. The Rays have done well against right-handers all season. Mm-hmm. I like our odds. Littell is due for a good start. He's 0-5 with a 5.28 ERA to start the season. I feel like he's had two very bad starts that have really ballooned that number. The other three starts, he's been fine. So I feel like we have a really good chance to be on a W5 by the end of the day today.
Yeah, I think so. And hand the Padres their third of four losses at home, if that holds up. They've only lost one game at home, not to the Rays, before they came into town. So that's a really impressive series. But I guess we should take this one step at a time, and we should start with the D-back series that started earlier this week. Dropping that first game, but then taking back-to-back extra inning wins, scoring 7 runs both times. Tell me how you feel about those Diamondbacks games.
Well, the thing that's kind of interesting about those games, I would say honestly, 7th inning of that second Diamondbacks series, the second Diamondbacks game, we're down a couple runs, no real offense, just a little bit at the beginning of the game, no real offense in sight. Feels like, man, we're going to get swept. This is honestly how I felt. Like, man, we are in trouble right now. First game was a okay Littell start, gave up 3 runs. But we just couldn't get anything going offensively. And then, you know, had a nice second inning in that game, scored a couple runs. And then after that was just nothing. And then and then all of a sudden we're sitting there and I'm like, man, we're in huge trouble. And then it was kind of all Rays throughout the rest of that game. And then the next day, once again, feel like we're going to lose this baseball game. And then all of a sudden, the team doesn't give up. This is something that we have said about this Rays team for a couple of years now. It's just the identity of this franchise. It permeates throughout all the players, all the organization. This is not a franchise that gives up. We do not pack it in. We do not, you know, just give up on games. We go out and fight every single inning. And this team has the talent roster to make these comebacks, score these runs in these critical moments. And a lot of it came on the backs of guys that we said to start the season, we need more from these guys. And they started to put it together in this series in dramatic fashion.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that second D-backs game in particular, where we had to come and tie it in the ninth inning, that was really, really impressive. Yandy Diaz, a pivotal part in both of those games, who we were starting to worry about that he was getting cold, but he's had a really good week as well. He's not even our bat of the week either. But he played a really crucial part in both of those games against Arizona. And yeah, I'm just super impressed with the quality of our bats. This will stun you, okay? This is both clickbait and real. The Rays in Major League Baseball this season have a team WRC plus of 132 with runners in scoring position.
Wow.
That is second in baseball, first in the American League.
Wow.
Across the season. Everyone, and that's crazy to me because that doesn't feel like it passes the eye test. Because everyone online says that the Rays are really bad with runners in scoring position, and we keep, you know, we have the Patrick Starr going another RISP fail.
Yes, and, which is funny.
Which is a funny meme.
It is funny. But
the Rays are the best team in the American League with runners in scoring position. How has that happened?
I think one of the things that happens in baseball, it happens kind of every year. Every fan base thinks their team sucks with RISP. Every single team, like across baseball, because because baseball is a game where so few runs are scored, every opportunity feels like a big opportunity. So when you think about baseball as a game of failure, right, where 300 is good, succeeding a third of the time is good. When you kind of put that up against runners in scoring position, and you say to yourself, if you are succeeding a third of the time, any other place, you are doing really, really well. And then you apply that to runners in scoring position. I think sometimes when that kind of same adage is applied to runners in scoring position, it feels worse, right? Going like 2-for-6 with runners in scoring position feels way worse than going 2-for-6 anywhere else in the lineup or anywhere else, you know, in the game. And that, I think, lends itself to the feeling that we are bad with runners in scoring position. One of the other things that I think some of it is feeding into the high WRC plus and also feeding into the low actual runs scored is we take a lot of walks with runners in scoring position. We have a lot of good at-bats with runners in scoring position. We don't always cash in with a lot of runs in those scenarios, but we are frequently loading the bases. And if you are loading the bases frequently, it means you're taking walks and you are putting guys on base. So it doesn't always show up in the run column, but they are having good at-bats consistently with runners in scoring position, creating opportunities. And as we've seen over the last week, when you consistently create opportunities to score the way the Rays have done, you will start scoring. And that is what the Rays have done all week this week. They scored over the last week. They scored one run in the first game, then seven, then seven, then one, which was all they needed against San Diego because the pitching was electric, and then four last night. That is more like if you told me that was the kind of run production we were going to get, I would be so confident in this team because I know what the pitching can do, which is what we saw in the last two games in the San Diego series. Because the pitching was kind of fine in the Arizona series. Like, the Arizona Diamondbacks have a good offense. They just do. Corbin Carroll was red hot the entire series. Had a two-homer game. Was on fire, right? But the Rays offense, which has consistently put itself in positions to score, continued to operate the exact same way and started to cash in on some of those opportunities. And it's like we said in previous weeks, this offense was predicated on the performance of guys like Yandy Diaz, Brandon Lau, Christopher Morel, and Junior Caminero. And they were kind of holding the team back a little bit. in weeks leading up to this one. And now all of a sudden, Yandy is turning the corner. Morel came around the corner. Junior has continued to kind of slowly get, I mean, and he's really had a nice week too. Like those guys, and now Brandon Lau last night, maybe that's the turning point for him to start doing better. So when you put all that together, as much as that number feels like doesn't match up with the eye test, I think it really does when you take away just looking at the amount of runs we scored and you actually look at how we performed with runners in scoring position, I think that makes a lot more sense, even with the eye test.
Yeah, 100%. Something I love about this team at the moment is their quality of at-bat when they get it with runners in scoring position.
Yes.
And you talked about that, you know, sometimes it is just a walk and it's not the bases clearing double.
Right.
But the Rays actually... Obviously, we talked about their really good WRC plus, but they also have a 13% walk percentage with runners in scoring position as well, which puts them second in the AL behind only the Mariners, and fourth in all of baseball. So they really hone in on their bats. And the thing you can control the most in any given hitting opportunity is one, can you control the strike zone? Do you make sure that you have to be beaten by the pitcher? You don't chase. You don't do anything like that. And the Rays do a fantastic job of that, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And then how hard are you hitting the ball? Now, funnily enough, the Rays have a really unique, I think, composition of players at the moment. In terms of like people that can hit absolutely clobber the ball and then you have Chandler Simpson there as well. But you know what? Their average exit velocity at the moment as a team is currently just around 90 miles an hour, which is in the top half of the league. Yeah, so they hit the ball hard. They have a good launch angle. They hit the ball hard and they don't chase when runners in scoring position. They take their walks. They have to be beaten. And while that doesn't always work, because let's be honest, even the best quality hitters only get a hit 30% of the time, and it will fail 7 out of 10 times. They're doing all the things they can control really, really well. And over a long season, that will manifest in really, really good results. And we were saying last week that they were doing all the right things. They were hitting the ball hard. They were drawing walks. They were keeping their ERA down. But we were still under 500 and it was a bit confusing. This is where if you keep doing the right thing, the results will speak for themselves. That's what's happened this week, where I don't think they've changed particularly much in what they're doing, but the results are positively regressing to what they should be for the quality of baseball that they've been playing over the past week.
Yeah. There is one negative statistic to look at with the Rays in scoring position that I think may also be contributing to the negative feedback. I'm going to tell you that. Before I tell you that, I just want to take a quick second to say thank you all for watching. We really appreciate everybody who takes the time out of their day to join us and talk about some baseball. If you would do us a massive favor, it's something that helps us out so much. It's free, doesn't really sign you up for anything except for to know when we're going live, and that's subscribing on YouTube and following us on the social medias. That lets you know when we're going live. It lets you know when you can contribute to the show and be a part of the show by commenting on YouTube, letting us know what you guys think. And we want you to do that. We want to hear from you guys. So do us a huge, massive favor if you could. Drop a subscribe, drop a follow, drop a like. Helps us out so much. We really appreciate it. And I'm going to give you the statistic that I promised, which is, I think, the reason why the Rays' wrist performance feels so bad. They are fifth in baseball in strikeout percentage at 23%. So almost a quarter of the time they are striking out with runners in scoring position. And the reality is that's the other kind of like unhappy, maybe like the ugly secret about the Rays kind of just in general, is that that number is not just limited to runners in scoring position. They are 10th in strikeout rate in baseball in all situations with 23.2%. The boys strike out. The boys do be striking out. But that is again, you made a really good point about that. We have a lot of power guys on this team. And one thing about power guys, they're going to be striking out. And that's kind of the reality. of the construction that we currently have. And the great point that you made as well is that guys like Chandler Simpson and Jonathan Aranda, and I guess Cameron Mizer, even though he does strike out a good bit as well, some of those guys are hopefully going to help those numbers out a little bit, kind of balance back the other way. As Yandy continues to improve and get kind of back to where he's going to be, that'll help balance that number out a little bit. But the strikeouts are ugly. It's really hard to watch. There was, I think, two games this week. I think it might have been both of the comeback wins against Arizona. Or I think we had 16 and 17 strikeouts in both those games. There was some number close to that. That is ugly. And, you know, those games were extended, so that does drive that number up a little bit. But that's still a lot of strikeouts in a given game. So that also, I think, contributes to the perception that the Rays are not good with runners in scoring position.
Yeah, and that's a good point. And strikeouts are going to happen, particularly with the way this roster is constructed. We do have some swing and miss guys. But I wouldn't be too concerned about the amount of strikeout in this team because I don't know about you, but one of my favorite Rays teams and one of the most complete Rays teams that we ever had were the 2021 Rays.
Yep.
And they led the league. They led all of baseball in strikeout percentage in 2021 with a 25.7 K percentage, which is a massive K percentage. And yet they had a team WRC plus of 114, which put them fifth in all of baseball, tied with the Dodgers. They were, and you know, we won 100 games that year. So yep. It's fine if you have lots of strikeout, as long as like there's power and good base running to kind of back you up. And that is something that the Rays have had over this past week in quite a large number. And that might come into play when we talk about this bat of the week that we keep alluding to.
Yes. The Rays, let's see if I can find the exact number, kind of to balance, to be connected with that. Right now, the Rays are slugging at 390, which feels kind of low, but I also think that's kind of, you know, connected to guys like Chandler Simpson, who aren't going to slug a lot, and guys like Taylor Walls, who just aren't slugging a lot. But you mentioned this in our group chat the other night. We were watching one of the games where I think it was either bases loaded or runners in scoring position. Somebody struck out, and you made a really good point. That's better than a weak grounder. Because the reality is, if you're in a count where you're striking out, the alternative is usually a weak grounder. Because a pitcher, unless they have like a full count or something, if they are in a pitcher's count, they're going to try to throw a pitch that is either going to strike you out or force you to ground out weakly, which could then be a double play, right? So in some ways, you almost would rather guys take big daddy hacks and try to hit it over the fence and strike out than just try to put the ball in play and hit it weakly to the opposite field of the shortstop. So there's give and take all, you know, in all of that. And I think the perspective on strikeouts is something that, you know, we kind of have to have, because clearly the team has that perspective. Because again, like when we talk about all these statistics and the things the Rays are doing, this is all stuff that the organization can see and they know even more intimately than we do. And they are clearly fine with the way the team is constructed and the amount of strikeouts that we have, because they have built a team that is going to perform this way. And they know it works, because just like you said, it did in 2021.
Yeah. So just sit tight, I suppose, and it will make you roll your eyes sometimes. But I think the quality of hitter that we have is far higher than we did of last year, where like what they're swinging and missing at is much better, I think.
Yeah.
Because this time last year, when Randy was really struggling and Jose Siri was out there a lot, they were just swinging at anything. Yeah. Like when Randy, like Randy's had a very weird year with Seattle, but those guys, like when they're not locked in, will just swing at anything. We don't have any guys that are like swinging at anything right now, which is really, really good. We're like being forced. We're forcing the pitchers to beat us, which is what I really, really like. So just keep doing that, and I don't mind. I don't mind if you get beat with a good pitch. It's just when you're swinging at sliders in the dirt and stuff like that. That's what drives me nuts. Yeah, but
I was trying to find this chart that I saw. I forget who posted it. I mean, maybe it might have been Brooksgate or somebody posted it during the week that was showing how the Rays are getting hosed by umpires as hitters and pitchers the most out of anyone in baseball.
Yes.
Did you see that?
I did see that. Now, to address that, some would argue that it's bad umpiring and there's a conspiracy against the Rays. I think there is bad umpiring for sure. But others would argue that it also means that our catchers are not doing enough good frame jobs.
And they'd be right. They would be right. But I'm looking at it more from the – yeah, and I agree. But I'm looking at that more from the batter perspective, where you think about when you look at those strikeouts and then you look at those numbers, it's like, well, you know, again, I don't really think that that number is as scary as it might seem. Because at the end of the day, you know, they're getting some bad calls. They've played some they've honestly played some teams with good framers as well this year that has, you know, kind of helped them or hurt them and that helped that their team, but not helped us, our team. So and again, when you see the offensive performance, when they do make contact, like you were talking about with the top half of the league exit velocity, like they're making good contact when they make contact. So it's something that I'm okay with the trade-off. But it is ugly to watch sometimes when you see Brandon Lau swing at the fifth slider inside and down. You know, it's like, all right, because I love Brandon Lau, but he cannot lay off the low breaking stuff. I mean, if you've seen it once, you've seen it a million times with him.
Yeah. Are you concerned about Brandon Lau? Obviously, he had a good game yesterday with the home run. Do you think, but other than that, it's been a pretty slow start to the season for B. Lau. Do you think that's a sign that he's on the downturn, or do you think it was just a slump?
So I think it's a combination of the fact that it's just a slump that he goes through every single year. I think he's hurt. Because there are some under the hood, like the actual like production numbers are like whatever. He's sitting at a 70 WRC plus negative WAR at the moment, negative one WAR. And it's funny because he's been a below average hitter. But if you watched him in the field, he's actually been quite good. There was, I think it was the first late inning win against the Diamondbacks. He had a play at second base where he had to turn it to get out of the inning without a run scoring because bases were loaded. And he, as the ball's coming to him, he kind of turned his body into the ball, like allowing the ball to kind of come to his glove so he could quickly turn the double play and make the double play happen to get out of the inning. He's made a lot of really nice plays like that at second base this season. So he's still providing value right now. I think the thing that is a little more concerning are things like bat speed and exit velocity, as well as he's had some subpar performance against high velocity pitching. I am going right now until further notice. I'm going to say that I think he has some kind of injury. I was watching a game the other day and he has something on his hand. He has some kind of wrap, something on his hand right now. So I'm of the opinion that he's hurt in some way and he's just playing through it. And with that being said, he's still providing production. He's still, he was for a while, still first in RBIs on the team with 13. He got another one last night. He's still in the top half of the team in RBIs. So he's still being productive despite whatever's happening. So I'm not overly concerned about it. I said in the Rays Discord, our RBLR Discord earlier this week, that if there are no believers in Brandon Lau left on this earth, then I am no longer on it. So I'm gonna be here until the end of the line on him. But yeah, I don't think he's like cooked or anything.
Yeah, the bat speed is a little bit concerned because it is quite a bit down, but everything else is like kind of tracking. He's actually like still got a higher average exit velocity than last year, similar barrel percentage.
Yeah.
Like he's still smoking the ball when he hits it, but he is swinging the bat slower significantly, which means that high velocity is way harder to get to.
Yes.
So I guess I don't know if that's he's either battling an injury or like his mechanics are just a little off, causing everything to slow down. So I guess watch this space to see if there's an adjustment to be made there, or maybe a 15-day IL stint to kind of get his body right or something like that. The problem is we've got a lot of hurt people. Ideally,
yeah,
we'd want Ha-Seong Kim or Richie Palacios to be back before Lau can have a couple of weeks off.
Yeah, I guess should we talk about the injuries now? I think this is probably a good moment to mention. We got some dudes hurt, and we've been accumulating them slowly over the course of the season, and it's just become more obvious once Mangum got hurt. Mangum pulled up lame trying to steal a base. And he is out with a groin injury. Prayers up. That's tough. They expect him to be out at least a month at the moment. They don't expect it to be out longer than that. Obviously we are still missing Josh Lowe. We are still missing Johnny DeLuca. We are still missing a couple of pitchers as well, but the outfield is hurting right now. The good news is that Chandler Simpson and Cameron Meisner have been so good that it hasn't mattered. But those injuries have resulted in guys like Coco Montez has been up for a day or two here and there. They've went out and made an addition, which, we talked all offseason. We wanted some outfield additions, and the Rays gave us an outfield addition.
Yep, we got Travis Jankowski for cash considerations, not Kevin Cash. We didn't trade.
He did consider this move.
So. He did. Cash considered this move, he comes over from that. sorry, producer Eureka. We'll promise to be better next time. Travis Jankowski is like, he's pretty much the like, he's a warm body that you can put out there and play dependable defense. Kind of anywhere in the outfield. You'd probably want him in a corner. He's past his prime. He's 33 now. So you'd probably want him in a corner, but he could play center and has played center in the past. He makes good swing decisions. He does draw a lot of walks. And he doesn't strike out very often. But Taylor Wallace is also the same. So it's actually when he actually has to put his bat on the ball where not much really happens for Jankowski. But he's going to be a fourth outfielder until either Palacios or Mangum or DeLuca or whoever is first back is back. So he's not going to get tons of playing time. He's in the starting lineup today, but that's to give everyone else time off their feet. So he's just there to kind of fill a role. And I think that's better than, I guess trying to force double-A outfielder out there, because that's kind of the options we've got left that can like play reasonable defense.
Maybe Tristan Peters, if they really wanted to.
Yeah, maybe.
But maybe they could force Brock Jones up.
You wouldn't really want to, though.
No, you wouldn't really want to. That's kind of where we're at. Because Mangum was the guy. He was our, replacement emergency outfielder. And now he's hurt. So that's kind of where we are.
Yeah, it's been a weird one where all the injuries have happened to one set of positions.
Yeah.
At the same time, our infield's fine. So, yeah. we also made a minor league deal for Andrew Stevenson, who hasn't played in the big league since 2023, went off to the NPB and also Korea as well to play. And he did okay in Korea, didn't do very well in Japan. But he signed a minor league deal. He's going to AAA Durham. And he's a guy that can't hit the ball very hard at all. But again, has decent contact ability, plays plus outfield, can play all three pretty easily and runs really fast. Last time he was tracked by Savant in 2023, he had 93rd percentile sprint speed. So he's a guy that can glove it and can run out there, which for a fourth outfielder is all you can really ask for when you're kind of just shopping around for emergency replacements. So he's also there for depth, because we were talking before the show, and it's basically because we've got the entire opening day Durham Bulls outfield either in the big league roster or on the IL right now. So we also need guys who can play at the AAA level so they can field a competitive team as well. Stevenson might come up if Jankowski's really bad or another injury happens, heaven forbid. But that's just another transaction to keep an eye on, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, because the reality is, Morel's getting a day off today, but your outfield 90% of the time is going to be Morel, Chandler Simpson, and then Meisner. That's your outfield most days. And the fact is, Meisner has played well enough and played well enough against lefties that he's basically earned a starting role whenever, basically every single day. We were kind of talking about it before the show. Cameron Meisner is healthy Josh Lowe. At least he has been so far. He is the everyday starting right fielder. And it seems, at least until further notice, Chandler Simpson is the everyday starting center fielder. Especially with Mangum out now. So, I don't expect Jankowski to get many starts in center. Right now, even though we didn't anticipate this was going to be the way it ended up being, we kind of came into the season saying center and right field are going to be kind of locked in. It kind of is in a weird way. None of them the way we expected, but it has kind of become locked in now.
Yeah.
And okay. If that's
yeah, I'm totally happy with it. Yeah. Cameron Meisner's second amongst American League rookies in WAR right now.
Yes.
Fangraphs WAR, at least. He smokes the ball. He has good average. Like, he smokes the ball. He swings the bat hard. He does have some swing and miss in him. Plays some good defense, actually. He made a great catch last night.
He did.
Against the Padres. Yes. Yeah, runs fast. Like, he's just toolsy, right? Raw, but toolsy.
Yes.
And taken and has some really good quality at-bats, I think. Even though he's got some swing and miss in him, I think the quality of his at-bats has been really strong as well.
And I think that's the reason why he hasn't, like, fallen off. Because if he was just, like, crushing the ball, eventually pitchers would adjust and he would start striking out more and be being attacked more. But the reality is he's making really good at-bats consistently. I remember there was a game against the Yankees during I think it was the second game in that series, where Weaver was closing out. And I think, like, Yandy was – or maybe it was Morel started that inning, looked bad. Brandon Lau – got up there, looked bad. And then Meisner was pinch hit, and he came into the game. And I expected him to strike out quickly as well. He ended up getting out, but he put up a really nice at-bat against Weaver, who is a tough, tough out. And he put up a really nice at-bat. And that kind of consistent quality of at-bats like you're talking about is the reason that I don't think he's fallen off in the way that I think we kind of expected him to when he came up.
Yeah. People aren't going to want to hear this, but both Josh Lowe and Cameron Meisner are both 6'4" with 220 pounds. They're both 27 years old. In 2023, I'm going to compare him to 2023 Josh Lowe, Cameron Meisner, okay? They both have a sprint speed of around 28 and a bit feet per second. They both have bat speed of around 73 miles an hour. And they both have strikeout percentages in around the 22 to 24 K percentage. They are extremely comparable, 2023 Josh Lowe and current day Cameron Meisner. Which, if we've just got 2023 Josh Lowe out of injured Josh Lowe, then great. I don't know how we've managed to just regenerate 2023 Josh Lowe into a different body, but we've done it. He deserves all the plaudits for that. Big up Cameron Meisner. Jake Mangum is literally a tick below him on WAR as well, despite him playing even fewer games, which is just as impressive.
And the tough thing for Mangum is he is probably, like, it's going to be hard for him to get his job back, I think, with the way that Chandler Simpson is playing, because they're both so good. But I think Chandler Simpson is unfortunately like a better version of Jake Mangum with a little less power, maybe. But, like, that's so I think it's gonna be hard for him to get his job back. However, I do think he will still get some run when he returns, because he'll slot into the fourth outfield spot when he returns. The thing, and we probably don't have time in this show to get into it too much, but we're gonna have to eventually, is what are we gonna do when Josh Lowe gets back? The news on him is that he's progressing pretty well. They're looking at a month out. So now the question is going to become, what do we do? Because as we will continue to tease, the guy who's been playing in left field has put it together a little bit. So you can't just say, well, that guy didn't work out, we're going to just put him in left now, or put Meisner in left now. That's not really going to work. You're going to have too many, theoretically, especially for Josh Lowe, because he's been hurt, but theoretically good bats and not enough spots to play him.
Yeah, that's going to be a really tricky situation when that happens. I don't know how Josh Lowe's going to get his job back. And I don't know how Jake Mangum's going to get his job back if Simpson continues to play as he is and Meisner continues to play as he is. And then you wonder about Johnny DeLuca as well.
Yeah.
How is he going to get into that mix? If all of them are healthy and the guys that are currently up are clicking, I guess that's a position of strength that you could potentially trade from to address a need elsewhere if you needed to.
Yeah.
Like, let's say, I don't know, the Giants are still doing really well and Lee goes down and they need a good center fielder. Maybe you could flip Mangum for a good reliever. I don't know. But you don't want to do that. either, because I really like Jake Mangum.
Yeah, I mean, being in a position where you have too many good options, it does seem like not something that happens very common to be in a position where you have so many good options. However, I think that our audience is actually fairly used to being in a situation where they have a lot of good options to choose from, and that is because they shop. I shopped at rblarsports.com, where there are only good options there. Shopped at rblarsports.com, Rowdies, Bucks, Lightning, Rays, Sun. You already know all the best merch inspired by your favorite Tampa sports teams are there. You can use promo code Flappy for 10% off your entire order. Shopped at rblarsports.com, promo code Flappy, F-L-A-P-P-Y, 10% off.
You'll just never need to flip any of those shirts. They can be permanent additions. There's no maximum amount of players or T-shirts that you need to keep. So just keep them all. Buy them all.
Keep them all. And while you are at shop.rblrsports.com, you can go over to RBLR Sports proper, which you all should be doing every single Monday morning when the roundtable is put out, because it is some of the best, not some of the best, it is the best Rays written stuff out there. You got to be there every single Monday. It's there every week. It's consistent. It's consistently elite content. RBLRSports.com, Rays Roundtable, every Monday morning. It is worth your time. I'm telling you guys, it's been elite every single week. Different perspectives, different kind of stuff that's being talked about. A lot of times it's different stuff than what we talk about on the podcast. Go to the Roundtable every week, every Monday.
100% agree. It's my favorite thing to read on the way to work every Monday. Week ahead for the Rays before we get into batting on.
We should quickly go over the Padres series because we kind of talked about it in passing. We should quickly mention it. Elite pitching duel in the first game between Michael King and Shane Baz. Really, really good. We'll have more to say about Shane Baz later, as you may have already anticipated if you've been following along with us for the season. Elite pitching performance. And the Rays got just enough offense to get it done with a 1-0 win.
Yeah. I mean, it was the Shane Baz show, that one. Completely Shane Baz show. Yandy Diaz drove in the game running one again. A key contributor in the offense. I mean, King is a really, really good pitcher. The Padres did really, really well getting him in that one solo trade. And I was worried about this San Diego series coming into it, because the Padres are a really good baseball team and we're playing a really good brand of baseball. And to shut him out, we're going to have to talk about Shane Baz in a minute. But what a game for him.
Yes. Yeah. And again, getting that production from Yandy is so vital to this team's success. And knowing that you're going to be able to start to rely on him, where he's kind of been a black hole for a little bit, which is weird to say, but now starting to get that production from him makes such a big difference. And knowing, because he does have, he has been there before, and he is going to be able to provide in those moments. So really, really cool to see that from him. And then we go over into the next game. This was a tale of two important Rays players kind of getting back on the horse. In the second game, which was a 4-1 win, another great pitching performance, finally got a really nice start from Pepio. Was something we've been kind of looking for all season. Really nice performance from him. Got to Dylan Cease early. That's kind of something when you talked about being concerned about this series, you were lining up against King and Cease. That's not a matchup that you're excited about as any team. And they handled it really, really well and did what they needed to do. You know, obviously, they only scoring one run against King, but King's just really good. And then getting three runs against Cease. Did the third one get charged to him? I can't remember if the run got third. It did not.
No, it was unearned.
It was unearned. But still, Bilal hitting a bomb. Felt so good to see him back in. He had another hit as well. Just really good to see him kind of back in the offense.
Arguably his best start of the season. It's up there. I mean, hit that and the one against the Rockies, but I think this was a tougher lineup to navigate. So I think this was his best start of the season. Still a couple walks mixed in there. I would love to see him get one walk or fewer in a start at some point.
Yes.
But my favorite thing about Pepio in this one is that he did not mess around. He did not play with his food. He went six innings, only 75 pitches.
Yes.
which is great what you point. Want to see, because the complaint we had about Pepiot is that he wasn't going, like, he was constantly having to battle through all these deep counts every at bat. But yes, 75 pitches through six is like really, really efficient. So love that for Pepiot, and a well-deserved win. And hopefully that will kind of spur him on to some other good starts going forward, because the Rays are going to need him to continue to do that until at least Shane McClanahan comes back.
Yeah, and the schedule does not get any easier. We finished this game against San Diego. Very winnable game. We'll see. I learned long ago to stop predicting Sunday games for the Rays on the pod.
Yeah,
I was almost always wrong. But it's a winnable game. We'll see what happens. Then you go, you get Kansas City at home, which they have a lot of talent. They've been kind of so-so to start the year. Winnable series. Then you go to New York, which, by the way, if we're going to take a quick peek over at the standings, they've kind of floundered a little bit. New York has not been able to really take off and run away with the division, while the Orioles have floundered and we've kind of had a rough start. We are only 2.5 games back in striking distance of the division going into that series against the Yankees if we take care of business versus Kansas City. After that, we come back home for the Phillies and the Brewers. So some tough series coming up. But again, and maybe this is a referendum on baseball as a whole. You might have said that the Padres were like an elite team that you were going to have a hard time beating. There don't seem to be a whole lot of like elite baseball teams out there right now.
No, the NL West feel like a powerhouse. Yeah. And then the Tigers have got off to a good start.
Yeah.
All of those NL East teams feel like sleeping giants that like haven't got into like fully going, like that's like off to a sputter start.
Yep.
The Yankees also feel like they've got off to a sputter start. But you feel like a playoff spot is still very much up for grabs for this Rays team.
100%.
Despite Fangraphs not believing in that. but yeah, I mean, all it takes is like if we sweep San Diego and have a good series against KC, we're definitely like we would then put ourselves in position with a series win over New York to put ourselves at the top of the division.
Yeah. All of a sudden, as we will then be starting May in a really good spot. And this is something that we were talking about before we went live. The Rays so far have been playing as less than the sum of their parts. There is so much talent up and down this roster. We've started to see it in the bullpen. That's another thing to mention about these last two games. No runs. Well, one run. No. No runs given up by the bullpen in the last two games.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that is really important for this team, because this team was sort of built on the strength of its bullpen and the strength of the starting pitching. The starting pitching is starting to turn around from what we expected them to what we expected them to be, and the bullpen starting to perform as we expected. You say it is kind of rebounded from a tough start to the year. Clevinger has been kind of good the whole time and continues to be good. Fairbanks is rebounding from a tough start where he walked a bunch of guys. All these guys are slowly kind of coming back to what we expected them to be, and that is a huge deal for this team to get turned around. And when all these parts that have elite talent kind of up and down in different tools, sometimes, you know, some have the same tools, some have different tools, but a lot of talent up and down the roster, as they start to play up to the level of their talent, this team is going to continue to rise, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's a really great team. I also want to shout out Uceda as well. He's had a couple of good outings as
yes,
well. Yeah, this team is on the verge, if every player kind of plays to not even their ceiling, but plays to what we like would their median, this is a really good baseball team. And I think people are sleeping on how good the median result of this team is, considering the 2024 was basically the floor of what this team was. Plus, I think we've raised the floor of a lot of our moves. Yeah, it's a really exciting time to be a Rays fan to see if this team could go on a big run. And I think this coming week is the biggest litmus test of that so far.
Yeah, you have a really, really good opportunity to win a couple of games against not like easy to beat teams. Like while there are no teams that are like running away with it, there aren't a whole lot of like truly terrible teams. There's a lot of teams that are all mixing around, and all the teams that we're playing over this next week have talent. Like,
yeah, I think if you want to be considered a threat in the American League, you've got to be able to go through the Royals and the Yankees. You've got to be able to prove it against those teams and potentially maybe like the Astros, maybe the Rangers as well. You got to be able to go through those. And if you can beat those, you go, okay, we're a real American League team.
Yeah. So this is a big week for the team.
100%. All right. Without any further ado, we've been teasing it all episode. We got to talk about bat and arm of the week. And what's interesting about it is we have actually got a split decision on our bat of the week. So I guess we'll start with the unanimous decision on our arm of the week. We've alluded to it already. Zach, who is the arm of the week this week?
Yeah, there's not a lot of suspense involved here. Shane Baz, 7 innings pitched, no runs given up, 0.3 F4 in one start. He continues to be the guy for this rotation. I said it to begin the year. I posted about it on Twitter. I said that he was going to be the Cy Young of this team. He is. I mean, I think it's still a little early to be talking about actual Cy Young. But right now, the way Shane Baz is pitching, he's going to be in that conversation. At least for the next couple of weeks, we'll see if he can continue to perform at this level. And the thing that has been such a huge part of him being able to do that is one of the things I talked about before the season began, which is not walking guys. He does not let you get on base for free. And if you get on base, his left on base percentage this week, 100%, and he's been in the 98% range for left on base percentage all season. He doesn't let you get on base for free. And when you get on base, he doesn't let you score. I mean, that's kind of all you can ask for. He's been elite to start this season. He's the arm of the week. And I think that the conversation around him being a Cy Young candidate, if he can have another really good start after this one, it's going to, the noise is going to be too loud to ignore.
Yeah. Absolutely outstanding. His fastball all year has just been amongst the best in the league. He's been so, so good. And the league are starting to wake up to how good he's been as well. Striking out a bunch of guys, but also the contact hasn't been great against him. He's just been peppering the zone as well, which is a big thing when you've got big stuff like that. He's just been electric. And I think you might be right. He might be the ace of this staff, low key.
Yeah, he's just been really good.
Him and Rasmussen are having a big old battle for who the big dog in the yard is, and they can keep doing that as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, that's a great battle for us to have to watch.
Yeah. I think Baz might do it because I think he's got slightly more leash on how many innings he can pitch than Rasmussen. But yeah, it's going to be a fun one because I'm a Rasmussen enjoyer. I mean, I'm a Baz enjoyer as well, but yeah. I think that's if you've picked your horse to be Shane Baz, you're winning right now.
We'll see. Raz has been great so far too. That'll be a fun competition to watch.
Yeah, 100%. Meanwhile, bat of the week, we've got our first disagreement of the season. I'll let you go first, Zach, on your bat of the week.
I for my bat of the week, I picked the guy who objectively did not have as good of a week as the guy you picked. However, I wanted to highlight him because he has been as advertised as Chandler Simpson. When you talk about the kind of hype that was around this kid to come up and be the spark plug, get on base, steal bases, be a chaos gremlin on the base paths, and then for him to come up and do that, and also, by the way, play really, really good defense in the outfield, he's done that. Put up 0.2 F4 over the span of this week, 150 WRC plus over the course of the week, had a the bunt that he put down, I think it was in the Padres game, you literally can't do anything against that. It's indefensible what he did. And he can also spray the ball around the field. He has been completely as advertised so far. He is fast. He runs for every single opportunity. He's going to find ways to get on base. And when he gets on base, he's going to terrorize the pitcher and the catcher. He's my bat of the week. He's just so much fun to watch.
Yeah. I want to talk about three Chandler Simpson plays that have taken place over the past 7 days that I think just show what Chandler Simpson is all about. One, the home run robbery yesterday.
Yes.
Obviously, earlier in that game, he made a diving catch, which he was nowhere near, and it looked really ugly.
What?
But he made a phenomenal home run robbery. And I think Chandler Simpson is still a little bit raw in center field. I think his roots are a little ugly. But the great thing about him is because of his speed, he can take inefficient routes and it'll be fine. Yeah. Like, because he'll make up for it with just raw speed and the amount of ground that he'll cover. And he's also got insane athleticism to get that high to rob the home run. And he got to, I loved how hyped he was about that as well. Fire me up. Fire me up, Chandler, because that's what he did. The second play I want to talk about is there was a ground ball to, like, it was technically to the shortstop, I believe, but it was up the middle of the diamond. But it looks pretty routine. He beat it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was originally called out, but it got overturned, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's game breaking speed. We talked about this before he got called up and when he was in spring training. Infielders have like a rhythm that they're in when they're fielding, infielders especially, where they go, right, as long as the ball gets to me in this time, I've got this amount of time to get the ball to first, because most, you usually get about 3.8 to 4 seconds,
right,
to get the ball from the bat to first base. So they're like, right, I know how much time I have. I've got this internal clock counting these 4 seconds. You don't have that much time with Chandler Simpson.
No.
You have to change your rhythm. And asking people that have worked in a certain way for literally thousands of plays to change the rhythm that's worked for them, they can't do it. That's not how brains work. It's not how muscles work. You can't just replace your muscle memory like that. That's a problem. For other players. And Chandler Simpson is going to get on base. Unless he hits a ball right at an infielder, he has a high probability of getting on base. That's game break. Yes. You're not supposed to be able to get singles on weak ground balls to the shortstop. You're just not supposed to. But you can.
So exciting.
Yeah, which is just nuts. And then the other play I want to talk about, just because I don't think we got a chance to talk about it on last week's show, was the... The hit, not hit. Was it a hit against the Yankees to break up the no-hitter?
Oh, yes. That was a hit. 100% a hit. Because we don't have to get too deep into this, but the complete nonsense of Yankees fans getting mad at the scorekeeper for just making the objectively correct decision in a timely manner, complete nonsense. That was 100% a hit. He would have beaten that out if he hadn't muffed the ball. 1,000,000% that was a hit. And of course there was a hit later that broke it up anyway, but just like relax, Yankees fans, you need to calm down.
And that's the third thing. He's already in the heads of Yankees fans and Yankees players.
Which we love.
That's a third lovely trait about Chandler Simpson. Love the guy. But he's not my bat of the week, Zach.
He is not. Who is your bat of the week?
It is none other than Christopher Morel. Christopher Morel had an insane week at the plate. He had a 199 WRC plus, led the team in F4 amongst position players with 0.3. He is already this season put up a whole Fangraphs WAR. Did you know?
I did not know that.
I lied. But it's over a whole Fangraphs WAR, better than he was last season.
Which is awesome.
Yeah, he's improved by over a Fangraphs WAR. He is 0.4 F4, but last year he had -1 F4. So he has improved by 1.5 wins already.
That's pretty good. It's pretty solid.
Over the year, he's batting a 132 WRC plus. Now, Ryan Bass tweeted a very interesting stat that I'm going to commandeer for my own, because anyone that wants to go back before the offseason will know that I said Christopher Morel and Junior Caminero's performance will directly correlate to how well this team is doing. Mm-hmm. Here's the tweet from Ryan Bass, which was tweeted before yesterday's game. Coming into tonight's game, Morel was hitting .407 with 5 extra base hits in Rays wins.
Yep.
When Morel hits, the team hits. Morel is a really important part of this lineup. We did the same song and dance with Yandy Diaz in 2023.
Yep.
And how much he contributes in winning games. If Morel doesn't show up, it's usually the same that the team struggles offensively.
Yep.
He is an X factor because of the raw power he brings. And I just want to tell you this stat. Christopher Morel has the highest barrel percentage in Major League Baseball.
That is not a that is cool to hear, but not surprising when you watch how hard he swings that thing.
Yeah, he, and for anyone that doesn't know what a barrel is, you've got to hit the ball hard, so the exit velocity's got to be over 95 miles an hour, and it's got to be between a certain set of launch angles. I believe it's between 15 and 35.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Launch angle. Yeah. Because that's like line drive to like big fly ball rate, which is your most likely way to get a hit is if you barrel the ball.
Right.
He does that more than anyone else. He does that 25.6% of the time. A quarter of his contact is a barrel, wow. Which is insane. And his walk percentage is also up as well, which you love to see. Not by much, but it is up. And yeah, he's absolutely slugging the ball, which is all I want to see from him. And I think he was one of the unluckiest hitters in baseball last year. If you look at his WOBA minus his ex-WOBA, he was like in the top 10 unluckiest hitters in baseball. So now he's coming back to what he should be, and he's appearing to be a really savvy move for the Rays. Because we had our doubts about Christopher Morel. But he's been really good and a key part of this lineup. And you know what? He's actually been kind of fine in left field this year.
He has been fine.
And like he's not been good.
He's not been good. He's been fine.
But he's not been like, oh my God, what is this abomination? Which is what we thought he was going to be.
He's not Harold Ramirez.
And he's, you know, last year with his like minus 1,000 outs above average or whatever it was.
Right.
So, yeah, he had minus 14 outs above average last year.
Well, can I tell you something else that I think is a boon for him that is going to continue to pay dividends kind of going forward? Right now, he is making contact with the ball 60% of the time.
Okay.
That is down 9% from his career – or excuse me, 6% from his career average. So he's actually not making contact as much as he has in the past, which to me says he can even be better. Because if you're saying that he's going to make hard contact and make an optimal amount of when he makes contact, it is optimal contact most of the time. If you then tell me he's going to start making more contact because that's what his career averages have been, when he makes more contact and it's good, then the production will even continue to get better. So I even think that what we're seeing right now from him, because this is what he's doing right now, what he did over the last week, is closer to what, you know, his ceiling is. And I'm here to tell you that I think he can actually sustain that a little bit. Because I think as his contact percentage comes up a little bit more towards his averages, that will allow some of that elite barrel percentage to manifest itself even more as he's making more contact.
Yeah. And he's also being way more aggressive than he has been in his entire career. And he's making, like, he is chasing a little bit more. But he's swinging more in general. And for me, I think a big contributor to his success is, one, his in-zone swinging percentage, the amount of times he swings at pitches in the zone, has gone up by 5% from last year. Mm-hmm. And it's higher than it's ever been in his whole career.
Mm-hmm.
And also his meatball swing percentage, so pitches right down the dick, I guess, to put it, is also up 5%. Last year, he only swung at meatballs 81% of the time. Now he's swinging at them 86% of the time. He's recognizing the good pitches to hit and being more aggressive on those good pitches to hit, which is 5% doesn't sound like a lot, but let's say on those meatballs, he's probably like getting extra base hits. So if he's getting 5% more extra base hits, 5% more of the time, that's like, you know, huge on his slugging percentage and on his OPS.
Yeah. And again, the way they tend to bat him is in and around high on base guys. So when you bat in and around high on base guys and you slug, which is the way the lineup is designed to work and designed to produce runs, that's all of a sudden there go the runs. And the team has done a really good job of getting on base all season long. And so the more we get that kind of slug from him and continue to get slug from guys like Aranda and Meisner, and hopefully start to get it from Bilal, some of the WRC plus that we're seeing that we don't feel like is always correlated to runs, we're going to start seeing those runs real soon. We already have.
Yeah, we already have. And we're going to see more of that against the Padres today.
Yes.
Yeah.
Feel good. Feel good.
I feel great. It was a positive show. I feel like it's been a minute since we've done like a positive show with like actual reason for positivity.
Yeah, there was no sunshine pumping. The Rays played really well this week, and they played it against good competition on the road. So I don't feel like there's a lot of reason for negativity. I mean, if we really wanted to pick apart some of the starters, having some suboptimal starting outings, the bullpen, they've started to kind of, proceed to where we want them to be, but there have been some shakiness there. But again, I think that those things are things I'm not worried about that will get back to where they're supposed to be, because I believe in those guys. The things we were worried about were the offense, and that is rounding into form. So with that rounding into form now, the rest of it will take care of itself.
Yeah. I think the only genuine flaw this team has is catching. But
yeah, we've spoken about that ad nauseum. Unfortunately, nothing has happened in the last week to change our opinions, on the catching position.
I think they're going to just see if it gets any better. I think they're just going to ride it to see if it gets any better. Maybe it's something you address at the deadline if we're in it and we've got a bunch of outfielders.
Yeah. I think Rort had a nice game against when he was catching Boz. That's about it.
Yeah, I think we talked all we can about Rays baseball this week, and it's been a great time. It's been a great time.
It has been a great time. And if you agree that it's been a great time, which we hope that you do, you could show us some appreciation by dropping a follow, subscribing on YouTube, letting us know what you think, either in the comments on YouTube or reaching out to us under these posts and kind of talking with us. We'd love to talk with you guys. We're getting into the thick of it, guys. We're getting into the thick of this Rays baseball season. It's going to be exciting. That's our show for this week. We're really glad that y'all joined us, and we hope that you'll join us next week. We're going to continue to be talking Rays baseball, hopefully with a little improved division positioning. But for now, Rays up.
Rays up.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLI Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.